What I think about when I hear coach your best, what I think about is the importance of performance, that it's we're living in a world where a lot of things happen fast, so it's about learning. It's about how do you engage people so that they can be at their best and obviously perform at the best. So it's about learning. It's about developing. It's about having engagement so people can be really good at what they're doing.
You're listening to the Coach Your Best podcast with performance coach, motivational speaker, and best-selling author, Jeremy Boone. Brought to you by athletebydesign.com. Today's episode is a conversation designed to help you make your athletes better. Now, here's your host, Jeremy Boone.
Hey, I'm Jeremy Boone, and welcome to the Coach Your Best podcast. If you're a first-time listener, it is great to have you. It is wonderful to be back online creating content that'll help you help your athletes. At the end of the day, the purpose of the Coach Your Best podcast is if I can help you be a better coach, then I know that I can help your athletes get better as well. And I've taken the past few months off. Lots going on in my world. We've started the 2017 NFL offseason with the guys that I work with. This is going on my 16th year working with NFL athletes in the offseason. We've got NASCAR. The 2017 season is already up and underway. A lot of great fun things going there. Continue to working with high school student athletes and leadership opportunities and helping these young men and women develop as leaders, as people first and players second. A lot of great stories there. And last but not least, and definitely the most important, my wife and I had our little girl a few weeks ago. And for those of you who are blessed to be able to call yourselves a parent, you certainly know what the word sleep deprivation means. And I am hopefully with my wonderful wife, who has just worked so hard to help get our new daughter on a schedule. We're back in action. So with all that said, you are in for a treat today. And during the past few weeks, I've had a lot of time to really think about how do I want to evolve the Coach Your Best podcast. Everybody today has a podcast and they go on and they're interviewing a coach. And you know, this is now year four for the Coach Your Best podcast. We've been around for a while. And one of the things that I've worked hard to make the Coach Your Best podcast a little bit of a differentiator is to bring on authors that I've had an opportunity to speak with or hear, because they're providing topics and information that are relevant for me and what I'm doing as a coach. And so I want to be able to share it with you as well. And so be able to bounce some ideas off of some close friends of mine, from Gary Schofield to Rhett Larson to you name it, a few others as well. How can I evolve this show through continuing finding the quality of guests that, again, directly impact me, but then also maybe have some fun opportunities to bring and interview my guest in a unique way. And I think you're going to have a lot of fun. So with all that said, here's the goal for the remainder of the spring and the summer. So by fall, by August 1st, my personal goal is to get 100 reviews on iTunes. And so if you haven't already had an opportunity to review the show, and listen, we've got well over six figures in downloads and listeners for the Coach Your Best podcast. And I think right now we've got only 50-something reviews. So we know you're out there and grateful to be able to add value to you. But if you're finding that this podcast is adding impact, do me a favor. Help me out. Help me grow the show. Help me help you. Take 3 or 4 minutes, jump on iTunes, and just rate and review the show. If you don't know how, go to the show notes on athletebydesign.com and click on this latest episode. It can be this one now. And at the very bottom, there's a little link that will go to iTunes if you're on Android. If you have an Android phone and you use a PC, maybe you don't use iTunes, there's a link down there on the show notes where you can jump on there and leave a quick review. Let me know what you like. And again, the goal is to get 100 reviews here by August 1st. Should be simple. Should be really just this episode. We should be able to get that within 1 week. So we know you're busy. We know you're that a lot of you listen to these episodes on your ride into work, into the gym. Some of you do it during your workouts. The last few episodes, we've asked that you actually don't listen to the Coach Your Best podcast in either one of those settings, that you sit down with a pen and a piece of paper and use this time for some continuing education. Today's episode will be no different. So I want to encourage you, take out a pen, take out a sheet of paper, take out your notebook, get your iPad, get your tablet that has your notes app on it, because today's episode is starting off 2017 with an absolute bang. And I have on my guest for the show, Ed Hoffman. Ed is the former Chief Knowledge Officer for NASA. And we spent quite a few months trying to connect to get Ed on the show. I first met Ed, learned about Ed in a presentation he gave in the Leaders Conference that he spoke at last year, and I had an opportunity to speak at 2 years ago. And the mosaic that he brought around his formula for success that he used to teach new leaders that would come on board for NASA is absolutely perfect for coaches and for athletes. I want you to take your time through this. This is really should be a special edition of the Coach Your Best podcast, because typically I let the shows go around 20 to 25 minutes at most, if not even less. But this one, we're probably going double a lot because there's so much good information. So enough about me and what's going on with the show. Let's jump right into my conversation with the one and only, the man, Ed Hoffman. Okay, I'd like to welcome to the Coach Your Best podcast, first time guest, but all around incredible guy, Ed Hoffman. Ed, how are you, brother?
It's doing really good, Jeremy. Great to be here.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. You know, for the listeners, as I mentioned in the introduction, I came across Ed and listening to his presentation from the Leaders Organization that I got to speak at a couple of years ago. And Ed, you just added a lot of value to me, and so excited to have you on the show and talk about your framework and how you help people get better. I think, you know, we have a variety of listeners from performance coaches, sports scientists, physical therapists, just general physical education teachers, and everybody I think is really going to get to enjoy your story. So let's just kind of jump right in, and without wasting any time, give us a little bit of background about how you first got involved with NASA, and then how you kind of evolved from the role of director of the NASA Academy for Program, Project, and Engineering Leadership to most recently, formerly now, being the Chief Knowledge Officer there at NASA.
Yeah. So I think, you know, Jeremy, I think it's about what you're about, what you're talking about. It's about, you know, how do you grow? How do you develop? How do you get better in terms of what's happening? You know, for me, the starting point at NASA, really, I grew up in a small town called Brooklyn, New York, right, with millions of people running around. And I actually went to school at Columbia and had the opportunity to do an internship. This goes back a long time. It goes back to 1983. I had the opportunity to intern at NASA. I jumped at it. I went down there for what I thought would be a six-year assignment, and I ended up staying for another 33 years. So it was the opportunity to work with people, to get chances, to have experiences, and that led to a variety of different things.
Yeah.
You asked about the journey, or at least that's the word that I use, because I look at my career as you go through so many different phases. I was brought into NASA in 1983. That was kind of a transitional time period for the agency. It was right after the glorious Apollo mission from the 60s and 70s, you know, going to the moon.
Right.
And it was just at the start of a new program, the Space Shuttle program, that would go on for 30 years. And just before the space station and Hubble And so NASA was looking to transition. And one of the things it does in that time frame is, how do we make sure we have excellence in what we do? How do we make sure that there's leaders who are good? And so they actually wanted to set up a leadership development program. I was at Columbia with a group doing leadership into the competencies of what make leaders most successful, most effective. They thought I knew what I was doing when I was, 24 years old. And so I started working with them under that activity. And so I started doing leadership competencies for them. Then I started doing development of courses and workshops for their leaders. Then I started doing interviews with these folks. What do they learn? How do you get better? And then years after that, we had the Challenger disaster. And I was brought to the agency level in Washington to create a project management initiative, which is one of the things you mentioned with the Academy of Program Project Engineering Leadership. So for me, it's been a lot of different paths and a lot of different things to do. But it was all geared towards learning, improvement, and how do you make sure that you have individuals and teams that are really synchronizing and being successful.
Now, I got to back up to the very first statement you made, because I know I'm going to get emails about this, Ed. You're from Brooklyn, New York. Are you an NFL guy? Are you a Jets guy, Giants guy?
Unfortunately, I'm a devout Jets guy.
Okay.
Now, that helped me. This is all kidding aside. So I was a kid growing up in Brooklyn. I was about 10 in 68, 69. So what happened to anybody if you grew up in New York in that time period? The Jets with Joe Namath stunned the Colts and they won the Super Bowl. And later that year, the Mets, the Miracle Mets won the World Series. And then in basketball, the Knicks. So I grew up as a kid thinking that whatever you dreamed would happen.
Mm.
And it wasn't until recent years that my team started to demonstrate that that's not true. But as a kid growing up in New York, but seriously, I really thought anything was possible, even a kid like me working at NASA, because of the Miracle Mets and the Jets and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, man, love that story. Well, circling back then to your journey there at NASA, getting an opportunity to be there for as long as you were, and then getting into the position of the Academy, what were some of the challenges that you end up facing, working with some of these talented young generation?
Well, I always tell my leadership that one of the problems we had at NASA, and I left about 3 months ago to do my own stuff, but NASA is a place with really smart, talented, accomplished, hardworking people, and talented people can be really tough because they have a history, they have a background of being successful, and so there's always going to be a legitimate skepticism in their mind of, what can I learn from you? Are you going to change something that's going to really make me better, or are you going to make me worse? And so I think it's probably similar again to a sports environment, where I would imagine the hardest thing is to have someone who is really talented, maybe naturally talented, and how are they going to be able to take what they can to get better? So that was always one of the issues, is how do you get trust from people? How do you get these engineers, project people, scientists who are really good at what they do and they're dedicated, and you're coming in here as a coach or as a consultant or as a learning guy saying, hey, we can do this better. How do you get that trust, and how do you build on that so people will work with you and listen to you?
Right. And I know we're going to talk a little bit about some of that in your model here in just a minute. Along your own journey there, what were some of the things, Ed, that you learned about leadership for yourself?
Yeah. So I'm known because I've done this stuff for 30 years. So people know what I'm always going to answer that question. And it's about people.
Mm.
It's all about people. At the end of the day, leadership is right. We want to influence something. We want to influence an outcome. And at this point in time, in terms of the world, everything that gets done is through people, and people working together in teams, and often these complex teams. And so it comes down to, do people feel respected, listened to, heard, encouraged? Are they being supported? Do they feel included as part of the team? And so the thing I've learned about leadership, I mean, there's a lot of other things, obviously, that goes into that. You have the technologies, and you have goals, and you have building a team and influence. But at the end of the day, it always comes down to, are we focused effectively on the people that we're talking to and working with.
You know, I love all the words you're using. I think resonate with all the listeners right now in the world of performance, not just high performance, but even down those working with middle school and high school. I think, you know, Ed, what would you say to those coaches that hear you using these words that are thinking right now, that sounds great, but today's youth that I'm having to lead and I'm having to develop, you know, are struggling with this whole sense of entitlement because of their talent?
Yeah. But and so again, I think that's right. Again, I've worked in organizations that I've been fortunate. I've worked with organizations that have really, really smart, talented, dedicated people. And that does make it hard because they have a risk. If they're good at what they do, they're always worried about, is this advice going to hurt? But I think it comes down to, you know, the conversation. If I use one word, what we're having here. People, the one thing that all people have, it doesn't matter where they're located, doesn't matter the language they talk, people want to be able to tell their stories.
Yeah.
They want to be heard. They want to exchange with each other. And what I found, so again, my background, I don't even think we mentioned it, my background at Columbia was in psychology. So I'm a psychology guy going to this big engineering and science organization in the 80s coming off of Apollo. Why are these people going to listen to me? Mm-hmm. And what I found out was that if I would ask them a simple question like, you know, what's the biggest challenge you have here? Oh, you're trying to do this. Or if I would say, here's what I'm trying to do. You know, how do we know what the competencies are of people who are successful at working these kinds of missions? I would find that all of these people would start talking. And once you have the conversation, then you can start exploring how to improve. So my number one message for leaders, for managers, for coaches, and it's more important now than ever before, is to really get good at the art of the conversation, talking to people, because we engage each other through stories. That's one of the reasons why movies, I think, are so successful.
Right.
You know, we get turned on by the Lord of the Rings or Star Wars or this kind of stuff because it's a universal journey of challenge. How do you overcome things? How do we work together? We like to tell each other stories.
You know, it sounds like, too, one of the attributes that you brought there, being a young psychology major guy coming into NASA, when you ask people questions such as the ones that you just gave us and you bring it with intention and attention, it sounds like that's what allowed you to build trust with them off the bat, right?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, one of the there were three areas that I found in my career at NASA you had to focus on, and some of this came from learning. But one, you got to be able to focus on right the individual because they make up the ultimate performance. But second, you got to look at how the team works together, and there's a whole different dynamic there. And then you also have to look at the larger organization because you can have successful teams, but if they aren't learning, then that organization may not be sustainable. But you use the word intention and attention, and those were exact words we used in terms of working with our people and in terms of projects. Because when you think of that, we're all so inundated with stuff, it is so easy to lose the focus. And that often leads to problems or failures in teams, is that they get distracted.
You know, Ed, I'm going to put you on the spot. We didn't really talk about this question earlier, but I think it's appropriate now because we're talking about story. And, you know, coaches as leaders love to tell stories. And you know, as you mentioned, I think one of the traps that I know I've struggled with and I see coaches and athletes, you know, in their culture sometimes struggle with, is that the coach isn't the hero of the story. You know, they want to make themselves as the hero of that story. So, you know, how did you kind of work through that process with, you know, the people that you got to work with in the academy and then as the chief knowledge officer of, they weren't necessarily the hero, but looking at the mission of NASA and what that was looking to accomplish as the point of the story, or does that make sense? Talk to a little bit.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, again, really, there's, you know, like you, I talked at the Leaders in Sports activity, and first I was wondering, you know, why is a NASA guy being invited there? But there's so many parallels. At the end of the day, And I've said this for years while I was at NASA, and it took me a while to figure this out, but performance happens at the team level. And for the early years when I got to NASA, I told you to start in 83, and the focus heavily for a while was on if you develop really talented, really smart, really capable individuals, then they would figure out how to be successful in a team. And then we had some really spectacular failures the late 90s going to Mars. And when you looked at that, we had really talented, smart individuals, and they were trying to do the right thing, but the team dynamics you weren't coming together. And then I started exploring, studying not only NASA, but other organizations, you know, sports teams and all that. And what it became to me is there's a difference between having, you may have really talented individuals, but they don't know how to work together. And I've seen that lead to failures in projects. On the other hand, you may have individuals who they have a baseline, they have the necessary skill, but they're not the best at their position or what they do. But when they come together, they just torch it. And I saw that at NASA as well. And so the notion of the hero, what I would always talk about in my environment, which is all about projects and teams, is, you know, either we all are going to be heroes because we're doing the different things we need to do right. We're playing our positions. Or none of us are going to be, because if the focus becomes on, you know, me, myself, I, and then we lose the focus on what we're trying to do in terms of the larger team, that leads to the breakup. That leads to usually competition and to silos and to problems. So I don't know if that directly answered your question, but I always try to create. I'm a big believer in stories. Yes. Big believer in conversations like this. And so I would communicate over and over again that the stories are about the team. Mm. And then if we want to focus on the individual contributor as part of a certain story, that's cool. Yeah. But it's never about the one hero who makes everything good. And if you listen, we've done a lot of stories at NASA. We, you know, co-authored a couple of books that did that kind of stuff. All the stories talk about the challenge of the team, of the mission, and then you'll see how the individuals contribute to that. So I think that's really, really vital.
What did you absolutely love most about any of the roles you played at NASA?
You probably can tell, and I can tell this from you, like people, right? Enthusiasm comes through. So I was always in a role where what I had to do was to help others get better. I was always in a role of it's about learning and it's about connecting with people. Those were the three things. And so my whole work was about people. And I can go in, I can talk to a scientist trying to understand, is there life underneath Pluto, or how do you get to Mars? And for a period of time, I would have the opportunity to talk about their dreams, about their concerns, about their ideas. I could work with some of these folks in terms of getting better. And I always felt so lucky to work with people who are trying to just do cool things, right, for the world. And then I'm a little part of that, maybe that dream.
Yeah. Oh, so, I love it.
Yeah. And really, I mean, when you'd asked me about this, I was very enthusiastic because I love this because you know, we don't know each other, but my hope is, my expectation is that for somebody or for something, what we're doing right now will have a positive impact. And for me, I'm able to feel a part of that.
Oh, gosh. Incredible. Well, before we jump into your four A's of success model, coaches and all the listeners right now, here's the filter I want to encourage you to listen through for the remainder of my conversation here with Ed. And this model is something that can be, and correct me if I'm wrong, Ed, but it can be applied on how you define team as your peers of other coaches that you work with. So if you're a head coach right now that has a staff or assistants, if you're a GA in college, so we know we've got sports scientists and strength and conditioning coaches that they're GAs, and you're part of a bigger staff that you report to assistants and head coaches, this model will apply in that context of team. But also for those of you that are performance coaches and actually coaches of teams of athletes that you're working with in small groups, with your actual entire team setting or just simply the culture that you provide. There are a lot of different applications of this model. So I want to encourage those listeners now to filter this model through all of those contexts and environments. So with that said, Ed, let's jump right in to, you know, your four A's of success. And, you know, your very first A, correct me if I'm wrong, you talked about ability. Was that correct? Yep.
Absolutely.
Talk to us about ability, brother.
Absolutely. So ability is what we all expect when we think about performance. And we tend to, I think, maybe over-focus on it. But ability is vital. It's one of the four A's. And ability has to do with the talent, the skill, the capability and the competence to do something well. So, you know, in sports, it's the ability to run or to field or to, you know, to do those. And in terms of working with a project, you know, person, is the ability maybe to communicate or to calculate a risk equation. So, but ability is your discipline skill. You know, you're doing this podcast, you got to have ability in terms of talking, in terms of asking questions, in terms of lining up people. So it's what I would call the discipline specifics that you have, and every position has different requirements for that. A shortstop, you know, has different abilities in terms of what they have to do to be successful than a catcher.
And I think, you know, for coaches, that would probably tie over to the ability to read people, the ability to understand athletes, the ability to, you may be great as in the weight room, but you don't know a lot about movement and speed. And I think all those things come under ability. Ed, do you see a difference between, or rather, do you see sometimes people you work with group under ability, the words capacity and potential?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I often talk about the notion of capacity, the capacity to be successful. I think that gets into a lot of things. I will sometimes talk about the capacity to leaders I've worked with is I've seen sometimes people, they're just overloaded. They're doing too many things. They're not able to focus like you talked about earlier. Yeah. And so they don't have the capacity to learn, to go beyond. I think that's important to recognize. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Ability is the most visible performance part and has to do with capability, competence, and those kinds of skills. I used to say when I focused on the issue of ability at NASA that what I was hoping to do in the training and the learning and in the coaching is that we would create individuals who had confidence, capability, and competence. And they're all slightly different things. And I've also seen in terms of ability, people who had a lot of talent and skill, but they didn't know they had it or they were afraid of it. So that's another part of that ability that's really vital.
Any good little one or two quick insights for those times when you had to unlock the ability because of fear? You know, a lot of coaches right now, I know quite often, you know, I'm getting emails and tweets about this athlete has all the ability in the world, but they just...
Yeah. So I mean, partly it could be oftentimes, you know, we'll talk about those other three A's that sometimes have an impact. But sometimes, you know, so again, this goes back to, you know, I'm probably, you know, boring people by saying it over again, but having that conversation, getting into stories, because I've seen people, for example, a number of years ago, I was working with a young woman who to me clearly had incredible leadership skill. I mean, she knew her stuff. She had the ability. She had it all. But then when I talked to her about being a leader or tapping her to do things, she said, oh, she's not a leader. And I said, what do you mean you're not a leader? She said, oh, no, I'm not good at that kind of stuff. I said, everything you're doing this, you're doing that, you're good at that. And she said, well, you know, I've always been told that's, you know, I'm not good. So it was funny, you know, she started getting opportunities and experiences. She started seeing the success. And I would see her, a couple of years later, and she was this different kind of a person. She was communicating differently. She had a different kind of story. But in that case, and often I see with people, they have tremendous skill, they have competence, they have ability, but their story, if you will, in their head is that's not true. So I think really the best coaches are able to pull that out, get the conversation going, and give examples where they start seeing, hey, I'm really good at this stuff. The other thing I would say about that is sometimes I always ask people, what do you love doing? Don't tell me what you think you should love doing or what do you love doing? And so every once in a while, I'll see someone who they have skill, they have ability, but they're doing something they don't really want to be doing. And so, you know what, if you don't want to be playing football and you don't have that passion, even if you have the skill, you're never going to be that good as someone who really loves it and dreams it. So you got to also know, what you really want to be doing. What are you passionate about?
I love it. I love it. All right, let's jump into the next day, which is assignment. And I'm going to stay away, Ed, from using any analogies of your Jets and lack of assignment on the football field. Okay. So
don't be not nice. You're from Carolina, right? So,
hey, listen, I've got no room to talk either, brother, at
right.
all.
Change it. So one of the things I found is, and again, this really learned so much at NASA. In the early years when I got there, again, I'm trying to teach folks who had done Apollo and who were now starting these major missions in terms of planets and science and all that. And my initial model was you do training, you train people and that gives them skill. And what I started hearing loud and clear from these people doing their work is that, hey, look, Ed, training is important, but it's a small part of it. That it's about experience. It's about doing it. That the experience and getting the work and being out there in the game, if you will, that's 80 to 90% of getting effective. And so the assignment, what I would always tell people, and maybe it's a different word for coaches, but assignment in my world was, and I would tell these folks, really young folks, I said, look, don't assume because you've gone to the training courses. Don't assume because you've gone to a university or a school that you have the expertise to be successful. You may have the knowledge, but now you have to demonstrate it.
Yeah.
And so, again, I grew up in Mets fan. I read a book years ago about, in the early years of the Mets, they had Casey Stengel as the manager. And I think he was talking about a pitcher who supposedly could describe, was a really brilliant guy and can describe how a curveball curved in total detail, but he couldn't throw a curveball, right? And so that's the kind of thing. We have to have the experiences to actually do it, and that's getting in the game. The analogy is, I guess, with the Jets too this year with the quarterbacks issue is when do these quarterbacks get the chance to play in the game? Because that's the only way you can really ultimately build your capability and talent. That's what an assignment is. It's doing it.
Right. Getting all in. Awesome. Now, the third A, I think, in my experience, Ed, is at least for right now, from what I'm doing day to day, working with organizations and schools and clubs, is the one that seems to be the biggest struggle among teams. And that's the word alignment. Talk to us about this concept of alignment, why it's important in terms of leadership and excellence.
Well, alignment is critical. In terms of experiences, I talk about alliances, right? And in terms of we're successful when we surround ourselves with positive people. We are I use the term, I always like to look for quote unquote friendlies. I don't know if that makes sense, but I'll translate it. When I'm trying to improve a situation, when I'm trying to maybe change something, I have some people who they're helpful. They get it. They're going to come to you and says, hey, coach me. Hey, make it better. There's going to be other people who approach it a different way. They're going to say, hey, I got this issue or this problem. Can you help? So these to me are friendlies. They're looking to do things better. And so that's the notion that I would say of alliances or an alignment is that you're working with other people who can, and the big word nowadays all over is network. Which the young generation gets. They get it through Twitter. They get it through LinkedIn. They get it through podcasts, right? They come together. You have an audience. They help each other. That, I find, is one of the most vital things for people and leaders to be successful and for just people in general is that there's so much complexity. There's so much, there's so much that goes into any one position in terms of getting good that I don't think you can buy yourself anymore really maximize. You got to have mentors. You got to have a coach. You have to have people on the team who are encouraging you. You have to have, you know, folks who are saying, hey, that's not the right way to do that. Or, you know, have you spoken to this person? That's why there's such a big advantage, you know, if you have loving and good parents, if you've had good teachers, because it's part of that broader alliance, that alignment of helping to make us successful. So what I say to people on that, and again, I see this with talented people, sometimes people who are really smart, who are really skilled, they're blessed with a lot of ability, they buy into the notion mistakenly that they have to do it by themselves and that they can't listen, they don't want to listen to anybody else. Because maybe it's a sign of weakness, but success comes from a large community and it's getting other people to help us. So I always tell people, get a mentor, get a coach, ask people, talk to folks, you know, build that network, because that'll be the groundswell of being, you know, successful. I mean, at different points in my career, I've had people, friends who've called and said, hey, Ed, you're going in the wrong direction. You know, this isn't the way to do. And that's so vital. If you don't have that, then it really is hard to just know what's going on around you.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I find challenging in working with talent and leadership and type A overachievers, you know, whether they're actually athletes or coaches or leaders themselves, when it comes to teams, is this misunderstanding or poor defining of grouping agreement as alignment. And
right,
like this week, and that's kind of the struggle. I have two different organizations where I've spent my time, Ed, of trying to do just that, is that, you know, the staff believes, or the leader is defining it as, our culture of excellence is based on agreement. You agree with me, we're good. And try to say no, it's alignment. Right. And all the ways that you just defined alignment, guys, going to be good for me to go back and share to say that's what a healthy culture is, a winning culture is. It's agreement is not the basis, it's alignment.
Totally agree with you. Matter of fact, I'll tell you a story that you made me think of if I have a couple of minutes. So, and this goes back to, and this was one of the experiences I always remembered. It shaped me, and it was a little event. So I told you I started as a intern at NASA in 1983. And so, you know, I was 24. I grew up in Brooklyn. I didn't know how I got to NASA or Columbia. I mean, I was like a rugrat, you know, growing up in the city. And all of a sudden, I'm at this one of these coolest places in the world. And in December, one of the things, a great leader, he was the deputy administrator for all of NASA. It was a guy named Hans Mark. And he would have parties for all the new interns, the students, and at the holidays, at the Christmas time, and all that kind of stuff. And he had an invitation. It was the end of December of '83, and my buddy from New York was coming to town, Brian Maruffi, and the party was a Friday night. And Brian gets there Friday, says, "Hey, what are we going to do this weekend?" I said, "Well, let's go. You got an invite to the NASA deputy's party. Let's go over there." And Brian tells me, he says, "Man, that sounds boring. Why do we want to go to a party with a bunch of engineers and leaders? Why don't we just go to Georgetown?" I said, "No, you missed the point. You know, at these parties, they're going to have food. They're going to have beer. We're going to be able to fuel up, and then we can go do what we want to do." So that was the Brooklyn kid's plan. I get to the party, first 30 minutes eating, having a good time. All of a sudden, about 30 minutes in, Dr. Mark basically calls everybody in a circle, and the students are all semi-circled, all his leaders behind him. And he says, "I want to welcome the students who are here. You're the future of NASA." And then he says, "I think we got about 29 students here today. And 28 of you I know are aerospace engineers. I know why you're here. But I see on my list that there's one student who's a psychologist, and I have no reason. I have no understanding why you're here." Well, at this point, Jeremy, I start sweating. my body is heating up. I can't swallow I figured, man, Brian walks away from me, says that was a good idea that we weren't, you know, it's like sea is parting. And so he asked, "Who is it?" And I raised my hand. I said, "I'm Ed Hoffman. I'm a psychology student from Columbia." And he says, "Well, Why do we need you here? Mm. Wow. And thank God, whatever, you know, I was able to respond. I said, well, I'm here because I'm studying the competencies of leaders. And, you know, if we have good leadership, then we'll have successful missions. Dr. Mark, who is so smart, he basically said, well, look, I'm a leader. Can you make me better?
Okay.
Well, we had a discussion. We talked about things and all that, and I'm drenched. I'm totally drenched now. So, and finally getting ready to, you know, figure head out. So, and 15 minutes later, the deputy administrator came up to me. He says, can you come with me? He took me into his office, all these cool, you know, rockets, and he worked for the military, all this kind of stuff is there. And he says, look, I want to let you know, I know I put you on the spot. He said, but I didn't understand, you know, what your role would be here helping NASA. And you're absolutely right. It's about leadership and successful teams. And I just wanted to thank you. You handled that well. And I hope you have a great career.
Wow.
And where I come back to that is that was really perfect for me because it taught me a few things. It taught me good leadership is about the ability to challenge people. And I'd gone to the party thinking it was going to be free food and beer and it's going to be easy. And I didn't have to think. And reality is an effective leader really does make you think, does challenge you, and does put you on the spot. It doesn't make it comfortable. And I always appreciated that because I never forgot that. And there was never a day after that I didn't think about why I'm doing something and how to explain what my contribution to the largest strategy or the team or the mission is. And so that's why I wanted to share that because I think it gets into that. Absolutely. I've seen some people want things to be nice or an agreement or easy,
right.
And that's not what it's about.
Golly, yeah. Great story. You know, okay, so we've talked about ability, assignment, alignment, and this last one, Ed, is, again, for me, in my experience when I first heard you share the model, the one that's almost the foundation for the other three, because without this fourth one, the other ones are really tough to really fulfill. And talk to us about the fourth A.
Yeah, totally agree with you. Attitude. And attitude is so important. It's interesting because I think that's the one that people pay less attention to. And yet, if you don't have it, it doesn't work. Matter of fact, I would say in my career, what I found that the reason why people would not have success at a place like NASA or in any organization was not so much the other three, it was lacking the attitude. So what's attitude? Attitude is the ability to work with people. Attitude is the ability to have a respect for the people that you're with, working for, working with, working around. Attitude is the ability to work with others in an inclusive way that pulls them into the discussion. Attitude is responding to a mistake or failure from the mindset of how do we get better and turn this into advantage as opposed to that wasn't my fault, that was their fault, or, you know, that didn't happen, or, you know, that kind of stuff. So attitude is the glue, I think, of all this kind of stuff, because if I believe, which I do, that the most important part of the variable is people, then people work effectively if there's that spirit of attitude. And that positive attitude. And it's kind of, it's what's been called nowadays, I think, positively, you know, a growth mindset, or it's positive energy, but it's really respecting people. That's the ultimate issue.
Do you think, though, too, Ed, that is sometimes it's more about just the positive energy that someone brings as an attitude? And let me give you an example. So, you know, whether it's athletes, for those that are listening now, to coaches, to student athletes, you know, when you've got so much on your plate to accomplish and you just get into your routine and it's go, 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 but yet you're asked to be a leader. And when you come into the room, you're just focusing on you. Your intention is to be positive, but from an attitude standpoint, but you're just focusing on you because you're trying to check off your list to the exclusion of not being able to stop and pull around and have the attitude of what do the people I'm about to be around need from me right now? You know, and I don't know. Any thoughts? Does that make sense? Is there any thoughts?
That's totally true. I got a shorter story. I mean, this is how it plays out on a larger scale. You know, we have the International Space Station, incredible accomplishment circling the planet. It was a participation of over 20 different countries. I was doing a discussion kind of like this with a leader from NASA and a leader from the Japanese space agency. And the Japanese leader at one point said, you know, in the early years of space station working it was somewhat frustrating because NASA always seemed to focus on itself. And it didn't focus on collaborating. And I looked at the NASA leader, and it was interesting. He was smiling. And he said, you know, you're absolutely right. In those early years, it wasn't any disrespect or anything. It was just that we were so focused on worried about the things we had to do that we didn't focus enough on our partners.
There you go.
And in retrospect, he said one of the things that he had learned that impacted him for all future missions is that at the time, if they spent more time working with the partners, listening, collaborating, a lot of the problems, a lot of the challenges we had within the organization, NASA would have been solved more effectively or quickly by working with others. But it's, you're absolutely right. It's a natural challenge that we end up focusing on our issues, on our challenges, on our problems, what's going on, so we get really center-focused.
Right.
And we lose the fact that we have this potential support around us.
Right. And that has, you know, nothing to do with whether the person has a great attitude or not sometimes, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think rarely. I mean, if you got 100 people, 99 of them are going to be cool, going to do the right thing and want to do the right thing, and you can have one that's always going to, you know, know where they came from. But there's so many different factors that can distract us, that can, you know, pull our focus, so it comes off that we are not interested in each other. And that becomes a problem because that can create, you know, behaviors that start, you know, just expanding. And now you have a team of people who they're not working well together.
We've got ability, assignment, alignment, and attitude. And then if you're listening right now, I'm hoping you've had a pen or pencil out. You've wrote those four down. And here's what, you know, Ed and I would like for you to do. Focus on one of those four for this next week, because we can't get better at all four at one time. And this is such a good model, Ed, that you shared with us. And grateful for your time. And we just want to challenge you, pick one of these four for the next 7 days and see how this affects you and your actions, thoughts, and behaviors and the group around you. And share these four A's with them and let everybody pick the one A that they want to focus on and improve. And in doing so, it's going to help you, your team, your organization within your sports, your school, be able to better achieve the mission, no pun intended there, that we're going for. So, Ed, last question before we close out today. Looking back on just all these great stories and just, you know, your career, is there anything going back that you might do differently?
I think in terms of myself, one of the things that I try to tell myself now is to enjoy the ride a little bit more, enjoy the journey. And what I mean by that is, you know, we're all trying to be successful. You know, a coach is trying to get a team to be successful. I'm trying to, you know, help a project, you know, do what needs to do. We're all trying to do our stuff. So it's easy to get so focused on worrying about the outcome or trying to get to the outcome that you don't see, hey, this is really fun what we're doing. And so I really enjoy it. I loved the career. I love everything that I've been doing, but I think I kind of probably could have done a better job more periods, just being grateful, just enjoying, just every once in a while during the day saying, hey, you know, this is tough, but this is cool. This is fun. And, again, I think that makes it better. And, that for me is the one thing that I thought about. There's so many, amazing experiences that I had that, again, even the story I gave early about the deputy administrator's party, at the time, that was not fun.
Right.
But in retrospect, I should have been laughing about it. I mean, here, again, a kid from Brooklyn, I'm at the number two guy from NASA with all the leaders here. It's a party. It's, you know, it's wonderful. It's a challenge. Enjoy it. So I think that's one of the lessons I would probably walk away with.
Well, speaking of grateful, brother, I am grateful that we're able to finally connect and have you on the show and just add value to all of us. So where can listeners go either to find out more about you, connect with you, and who want to know more?
I am on LinkedIn. So, you know, you can just hit on Ed Hoffman, and I'm now the I set up my little company, Knowledge Engagement, and I do some work with different folks. So, yeah, probably the best thing is to just reach out to me on LinkedIn, Ed Hoffman, and that'll be a way to make a connection.
And I'll be sure to put a link to your LinkedIn profile in the show notes. So, Ed, thank you for your time, and maybe we would love to have you back here and going into the 2017 summer, fall, and continue to hear just some great stories.
Well, that'd be good. And that'd be great to go out to Carolina and get on the lake with you.
Let's do it. Come on. All right, brother. Thanks again.
Thanks, Jeremy.
This has been another episode of the Coach Your Best podcast with Jeremy Boone. Get even more helpful tips and free coaching resources to help you become a world-class coach by visiting athletebydesign.com.